On a Monday, it is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Glad you could be here. She is a family nurse practitioner, runs her own clinic in Appleton, and now add to that a first-term assembly lawmaker. You have aligned to Republican Representative Rachel Cabral Guevara of Appleton. A bit of roadmap here for our conversation. We'll explore policies aimed at helping businesses recover, mental health in schools, and other K-12 initiatives. And we start with her goals in office. Do you live in the Fox Cities? What issues are most pressing? What do you want lawmakers to understand about the impact of the pandemic? 800-642-1234. Representative Cabral Guevara, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Wonderful. Thank you for having me this morning.
Yes.
Bright and early, that's for sure.
Yes.
Bright and early.
Thank you. This is your first time with us here on the morning show since being elected. Can you introduce us to your top priorities in office?
Thank you very much. Yes, you are correct. This is the first time I've been with you since I've been down in Madison and elected to this seat. Biggest priorities to you or to this district as well as this state are focused around healthcare. Coming as a nurse practitioner and running my own clinic, some of the things that I found challenging is access to healthcare as well as affordability to healthcare, but also looking at different policies that might affect women here in the state of Wisconsin as well as others. Just bringing my health background to the world of politics.
Yeah, you know, you own a cash-based direct care provider clinic operating on this menu of fees set for services. It takes no insurance, makes house calls. How does your fiscal approach of your clinic inform how you see healthcare delivery, how you see healthcare policy, and healthcare cost in Wisconsin?
Well, you know, the one thing that is most obvious to me is that healthcare doesn't have to be as wild as it is in large systems. Healthcare can be accessible. Healthcare can be affordable. Healthcare can be personable again. And, you know, as I continue my journey in healthcare and talk to others and many of the students that I taught at the UW system, healthcare's turned into something that we didn't necessarily sign up for. And I'm trying to bring that back. When it comes to the finances of it, yes, healthcare can be expensive, but there are ways to go around it that can make it more accessible and more affordable to people. And I've been doing that here for 8 years, and I'm trying to teach other students, other nurse practitioners, that there are ways to do this in Wisconsin. It doesn't have to be the chaos that it's turned into.
Can you be more specific? What are ways around this? How do you drive down costs of healthcare, especially for families who are barely trying to make ends meet and can't pay a cost for a service out of pocket?
Yeah. So some of the things that we do here at our clinic are keep our staffing low. So we ask our patients to be patient and to work with us as we keep our staffing low, but we always get back to our people. We don't have to have these humongous buildings everywhere throughout the state and throughout the district. We also work through people's homes. And so that also can keep our costs down because we don't have an extremely large business cost, rent cost. So we can go to people's homes. We can go to people's businesses. We're just looking at the money that's coming into our clinic. How is it being spent? Is it being spent in the most efficient way? And then we are then putting that cost onto our patients. The other thing that we're doing is when you are able to, so when we think about income, we can definitely provide a fair income to the folks that work here, but we also need to be cognizant of the fact that as a nurse practitioner, I don't need to make $150,000 and $200,000 a year. If I'm able to make that connection with my patients and I'm able to feel like I'm doing my job that I signed up for in healthcare, I find nowadays in the large systems that I have worked for, that connection is missing. And so I'm willing to connect with my patients and spend that extra time and feel worthy, still make a decent wage, but yet not expect to get paid exorbitant amounts that then fall back onto my patients. So that connection is being lost. And so many nurses, nurse practitioners are saying, how can I regain that? And places such as mine and others throughout the state are looking at that as a priority.
We're talking with Rachel Cabral Guevara, who's a Republican state representative from Appleton. We're going to learn more about the legislation, her priorities in office. You can join in with your questions, 800-642-1234. Along the lines of healthcare, you want the state to require health insurance providers to cover breast screenings, either fully or with a maximum out-of-pocket cost of $50. Can you explain more about this legislation and what you see it doing?
Yeah. So this legislation actually came about last session with Mike Rohrkast, who held this seat prior to me. There was an individual in our district who had come to him and said, you know what, I am in late stage breast cancer because I had gone every single year to get my mammogram done, every single year. And every year it came up that all was well, it was negative. The problem was, though, she had very dense breasts. And when you use a mammogram on dense breasts, you are not able to always capture breast cancer. And so if she had been offered the opportunity to do an ultrasound as a screening rather than ultrasound only for diagnostic purposes, this breast cancer would have been found. Now, this happens to many women throughout our state. And when we talk about cost and keeping costs down for screening for an ultrasound, this can be a few hundred dollars. But if this is not caught, and now you're in late stage breast cancer when it is caught, now you're talking millions and millions of dollars for therapies and to sustain life. And so for me, one thought, when we talk about affordability with healthcare, early screening, early prevention are very important. And so this bill is now the continuation of the one that Mike did. Mike Rohrkast, his bill's outcome was posting on your mammogram if you have breast dense tissue, and if so, then this should be further evaluated. And now this is the second part of that bill that says, you know what, you do have dense breast tissue. Let's see if we can get this covered for screening purposes, not just diagnostic purposes, for early catch.
I don't mean to tie this always back to your clinic, but what do you advise your patients? Where do you send your patients for their breast screenings?
Well, there, as of right now, mammograms can only, at least in my region, be obtained at some of the large systems. And so I refer them to the large systems. If ultrasound was an option, there are other smaller companies throughout the state that could provide ultrasound for screening purposes, which through my clinic, we can get reduction in costs. If you're paying cash for many things, many of these organizations, many of these companies that offer these screenings will provide you a reduced cost for services.
Turning to another bill that would have the state health department issue grants for suicide prevention efforts at gun shops and firearm ranges. And these grants would pay for training and marketing material, temporary firearm storage. Why do you support this legislation?
So this is a bill that actually came out from Representative Jesse James. And for me, there's a lot of passion behind this because as a child, my grandmother had committed suicide with a firearm. And yes. Mm-hmm. And so I've had the privilege to send on the mental health committee and look at some of these options that might be available for folks here in the state of Wisconsin. And so when Jesse proposed this, I thought, what a wonderful opportunity to train folks to be able to see if folks might be contemplating suicide or might be struggling at the moment, as well as giving them an opportunity to provide, I guess, money for storage. So if there was a family member that was in need or a customer in general that was in need that seemed to be of high risk, this is another option to provide services to maybe help that individual as well as a family. Although my grandmother is gone, you know, 30 years later, I still think about her quite often and always wonder if there was something that could have been done. And I just see this as a great opportunity. And so when Jesse had mentioned the opportunity to jump on this bill, I was right there, right behind him in support.
Well, what about a red flag law? What about allowing family members or police to ask a judge to temporarily remove firearms from a person who's considered to be a danger to themselves or to others?
And I hear you on this one, but I also understand that people have their rights. And so when you get the courts involved, and there have been cases from my understanding that have taken that approach, it could take months, it could take years before somebody can get their firearm back. And when it comes to the court system, I would prefer medical provokes to judge somebody rather than a judge themselves on somebody's mental health status at the current moment. And so it's a challenging spot to be in, because I do see benefit to this, but I also see benefit to the approach that Jesse is having. And it's hard, at least in my opinion, to take somebody's rights away through the court system rather than on a voluntary basis.
But suicide rates among Wisconsin residents increased 40% from 2000 to 2017, and that's state health department numbers. How do you suggest making communities safer from guns?
Well, I will say, not to jump past your point here, but I would say the big concern to me in the last few years since COVID started is how high the suicide rate has increased since COVID came to be. And that has been quite frustrating to me. And I'm hoping that we can get back to normalcy here in Wisconsin as well as the United States due to the increased suicide rate to that. Overall, when we think, what years did you say, 2000 to 2017?
Mm-hmm. So before the pandemic, yeah.
I do hear that as a concern, but I also see suicide in many other forms. And here at my clinic, there have been a few patients that have died of suicide, and none of them have been from guns. I'm seeing it in other forms of medication overuse. I'm seeing it in prescriptive drug use. There's other forms that is just not solely gun use.
Representative Rachel Cabral Guevara of the 55th Assembly District assumed office in January. We're exploring her legislative priorities. Do you live in Appleton, Nina, Fox Crossing, another community in the district? What do you want to bring up with your lawmaker? Join in 800-642-1234. Back in a minute for more State Cap here on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're taking bills one at a time with first-term Assembly Republican Rachel Cabral Guevara of Appleton. A recent statement from three organizations that represent child health care practitioners, they declared a mental health state of emergency for children and teens. What should Wisconsin K-12 schools do to address the growing mental health challenges? Does your school have enough counselors, have enough support staff to meet the needs? It's 800-642-1234, and Representative Cabral Guevara is with us for eight more minutes. Turning to education, K-12 schools, the Assembly passed a bill that would require the state to issue $100 million in grants for K-12 mental health programs, and you voted for the bill. Can you tell us more about why you support it?
Well, as mentioned earlier, mental health is a big issue right now, particularly since COVID, with kids being isolated, kids not being in school. I know they are back this year for the most part. This has been on the incline. I'm seeing it in my clinic. I'm hearing it from the counselors in the community. I supported it because it's essential. Mental health is the foundation of our future in regards to where do we go in our journey. When we think about health overall, most of the time people think about how are your joints working? How is your heart working? But if your mental health isn't intact, the outcomes are more impactful than a hurt joint or a sore ankle. And so this $100 million I feel is essential to get kids back feeling safe, feeling secure, feeling unafraid in their communities. It needs to be granted to all of these communities throughout our state of Wisconsin for these kids. And not just the kids. I know this grant is $100 million for K through 12, but I'm also seeing it in my adult patients. Mental health is on the top of the priority list for me.
Well, what happens when the COVID relief dollars are spent? With one-off funding, it's gone, and the state won't have a means to continue these programs, the level of these services when, you know, mental health issues are really, really dire for children. What do you make of that?
Well, that definitely is something that has sat on my mind. There's always a limit to funding. There's always a limit to funding, no matter what it is, what organization, what part we're talking about. And so using these funds in the most effective way, in the most rapid way to get folks feeling secure and feeling safe once again is essential. I don't have a solution for that because you are correct. $100 million is a lot of money, but if it can be used now and we can reestablish where we were prior to COVID, I think that our outcomes are going to be wonderful. There has to be evaluation. There has to be assessment on how's that money being used? Is it being used in the most effective way? Because when it does run out, where do we go from there? I know that prior to COVID, there was a wonderful program in the state of Wisconsin that initiated mental health services in the schools. And this was a grant program that could be reapplied for. I know Nina received it initially. I know there's many other districts throughout the state of Wisconsin. Unfortunately, I don't have the list here, but that was presented in health committee a few months ago. And that was an amazing organization. And that was an amazing opportunity to start these programs. So I just see this as a boost to get people back to where we were pre-COVID.
We're talking with State Representative Rachel Cabral Guevara of Appleton, looking at her priorities in office, legislation advancing at the state capitol. Let's go to Chris now in Elkhorn. Hi, Chris. What is on your mind?
Hello. I just had a question about mental health priorities and specifically adults. You mentioned earlier that the suicide rate for adults jumped significantly from 2000 to 2017 by 40%. And a lot of suicides are committed with handguns specifically. And I was just kind of wondering if the senator had anything planned, even outside of gun control. I mean, I heard her anecdotal evidence already, but is there anything that she's looking at for helping adults with mental health challenges? Because I know that's very expensive in our private health care system. Yeah,
Chris, thank you. Appreciate that. And go ahead, Representative.
I would say that at least in my district, there are a few counseling centers in this area that have received grant money to provide either free counseling or counseling at a reduced rate for folks based off of their income. I know that there are community centers throughout our state that also provide counseling services to folks based off of these tiered systems. I have been a support of them. I have worked at them in the past, and I continue to refer my patients to them. Again, mental health, in my opinion, is so much more essential, well, as essential as physical health, but yet I see it so much more impactful, not only on that individual, but for their family. And so breaking the stigma and allowing folks to know that it is okay to reach out to mental health counseling services and to ask for help from your providers is the biggest barrier. There are so many people that don't reach out until it's at the extreme point. I wish people felt comfortable and would reach out early on rather than wait to the end.
I'm wondering, when you refer patients, do you ever hear whether they're able to get in right away or do they have to have a long wait? Is there a waiting list to get in for to see a mental health provider?
Definitely a great question. So here, when I refer my patients, there's two ways of going about it. You can be referred in person, but we also have an opportunity to be referred via telehealth now, which has been absolutely amazing. And that has really come out of COVID. So that is one positive that's come out of COVID. We also had some legislation that would break down barriers to allow counselors as well as mental health specialists to work across state lines and get licensed easier and allow for easier access for our citizens here in Wisconsin to access mental health via telemed as well as, in person. But telehealth, in my opinion, from what I found and from what I referred, there's very short wait for this opportunity. And so depending on where you go, please ask if they have in-person or telehealth, because I know that access is a heck of a lot easier via telehealth nowadays. And it also makes it more accessible. I mean, you could do this at work. You could do it from your home. When I was working at a counseling center here in Appleton not too long ago, the compliance rate went up so much. There were hardly any no-shows because people were able to interact through telemed and or telehealth. And so they were very grateful for that.
We only have a few seconds left, but I want to ask you, circling back to the K-12 mental health grants, DPI would be required to provide the legislature with an accounting of relief funding and how they've used the grants. Why wait to issue grants for student mental health until that accounting is done first?
I don't know the details to that. I wish I could respond a little bit to that. I guess I would say, in my opinion, the sooner we can get this money out, it is essential. This money shouldn't be out now. It should have been out prior, simply because from the day COVID hit and the day kids left school, the day that, you know, I have a lot of kids coming in here with concern over the mask wearing, the moment that this came into play, I wish there would have been funds easily available to get mental health up and rocking from day one. Unfortunately, we're at the tail end of it here, I'm hoping, and we need to get this money out as quick as we can. I wish I had a better answer for you, but I don't.
Representative, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. If there's anybody out there that has any suggestions to improve access and affordability, I'd love to sit down and talk with them or Zoom them or call them on the phone.
And please reach out to me. News update is next. On a Monday, it is a State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We have Wisconsin's chief elections officer on the line. Administrator of the Wisconsin Elections Commission, Megan Wolf, is here. Let's take stock of all the probes into the 2020 election. Senate Republican leaders announced last week their intentions to open an investigation. Assembly Speaker Robin Voss's investigation into the 2020 election could spill over into next year. And the Legislative Audit Bureau recently released its findings, making dozens of recommendations to the legislature and the State Elections Commission on how to improve election administration. Your thoughts on how to achieve free, fair, and safe elections, 800-642-1234. Administrator Megan Wolf, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Well, good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
Good morning. Before we jump into more specifics, what do you broadly make of Republicans' ongoing reviews of the 2020 presidential election?
I think we're always glad to cooperate with any request to explain how elections work, to provide data, to answer questions. In so many ways, that's what we're here for. That's what I'm here for. And so I'm always glad to be able to provide that information and to help answer people's questions about the election. And I think that's why we're so pleased that the Legislative Audit Bureau's report did use that data that we presented to really show that the 2020 elections were fair, they were accurate, and they were secure. And so I think whenever we can answer those questions, it's worth our investment of time to be able to provide that information.
But when those questions come up, so do proof of documentation. Should election clerks hand over original ballots and original documents when these investigations call for them?
So those are questions for our municipal clerks to decide. Each of our 1,850 municipal clerks, so the clerk in each of our cities, towns, and villages here in the state of Wisconsin, they are the election official for their jurisdiction, and they have to work in accordance with their legal counsel to decide what they're able to turn over in terms of reviews, in terms of public records. And so those really are decisions for the local election officials to make because they're the custodians of those materials. Those materials cannot be replaced, and so they have to make very serious decisions and considerations when people ask to review those materials in terms of how they structure that review.
Last week, Republicans in the legislature, including Assembly Speaker Voss, called for your resignation over how the Elections Commission handled the 2020 elections. What is your response to Republicans who say you failed to act appropriately as the agency's administrator?
I think those calls are not productive. I think they're baseless, and I think they're just partisan politics. They also completely misrepresent my role and the role of the commission. You know, I'm required by law to be nonpartisan. I don't have a vote on the commission, and the actions of the six-member commission require four votes. So being nonpartisan, that means a lot of times that somebody wants or expects me to do something that is motivated by partisan politics. And when that happens, I have to stand strong. I have to rise above attempts to sway me. And it also means that partisans from either side of the aisle are often upset with me simply because I did my job. And my job is to implement the directives of the Bipartisan Elections Commission. My job is also to guard election administration from partisan pressure and influence. And my job is to correct the record and to provide facts when baseless claims are lobbed at our elections in an attempt to undermine the integrity of our democracy. Ultimately, I think I won't be leaving, which is not the easy choice. Being nonpartisan in this hyper-partisan political environment is incredibly difficult.
I was going to ask is the nonpartisan nature of your job, of your body, is that at risk?
Well, the body itself is not nonpartisan. So the body itself is six commissioners that mm-hmm. are partisan appointees. So six commissioners that are appointed by legislative leadership. So our commission is made up of three members that are appointed by Republican legislative leadership and three members that are appointed by Democratic legislative leadership. And anytime a decision has to be made, including how we implement the recommendations of the Legislative Audit Bureau, it requires four votes of that commission. So it's always going to be a bipartisan decision. And my job is simply to implement those directives. And so I don't have a vote on the commission. I don't have, I provide information to the commission when directed and implement their directives. And so I think that because of that structure, it does mean that there's a lot of checks on the process, but it also means there's a lot of pressure on me as a nonpartisan to make sure that we're continuing down a nonpartisan path.
If you're just joining us, we have Megan Wolf, Administrator for the Wisconsin Elections Commission. You can join in. Are you concerned about the elections process? Should voting procedures change in Wisconsin? What do you make of the investigations? 800-642-1234. Andrew is joining us from Dousman this morning. Hi, Andrew. I understand you want to talk about mail-in ballots.
Correct. I just wanted to ask what your guest thoughts were on doing away with the mail-in ballot process, just to make the system more robust and give people more confidence and to help eliminate any foreign interference in our elections, because that was a huge concern since 2016, and I think people across the board are concerned about it.
Andrew, thanks. Go ahead, Administrator.
Well, I really appreciate that question. Thank you. A major change like that would require some pretty major bills to pass through the legislature and to be signed by the governor. And so I think if the legislature were to consider changes to the absentee by mail process, that would be something that would be quite significant in terms of us providing feedback on how that would work. Now, that being said, though, I think that folks should have confidence in our absentee by mail process. It's a very deliberate process. You cannot receive an absentee ballot by mail until you are lawfully registered to vote. You then make your request. You provide your photo ID. And a ballot is essentially checked out to you by your municipal clerk, so your election official in your city, town, or village. And then when that ballot comes back, it has to be checked back into your voter registration record. And so not only is your clerk tracking that and ensuring that only ballots are issued to lawfully registered voters and only one ballot can be counted per voter, you as the voter have the opportunity to also track your absentee ballot. So if you go to myvote.wi.gov, you can actually track your absentee ballot to ensure that it made it back in time, that there are no issues with that ballot. And of course, it's another way to check that participation that you meant to have there is recorded for your record.
Andrew, thanks for the call. I want to turn to Racine County, where the sheriff, Christopher Schmeling, said election laws were shattered by the State Election Commission, calling for further investigation into the nursing home situation. Can you explain your position, what you're seeing out of Racine County?
Sure. So the commission made a decision about special voting deputies. So these are folks that are sent to nursing homes and care facilities to conduct voting with residents. They made a decision that because special voting deputies were not going to be allowed into those care facilities during the pandemic, that clerks should proceed to the statutory process of mailing those voters their ballots. They made that decision more than 18 months ago. And I think it's really important to note that they made that decision unanimously before the April 2020 election. And they made it on a bipartisan basis in an open meeting. And so our agency is so unique from most other agencies in the sense that all decisions are made by the bipartisan commission in an open meeting. And so you're going to see the materials for our election posted in the weeks prior to the commission meeting. There's public comment available where you can weigh in on a decision that's before the commission. And then after the meeting, you'll see the video posted, you'll see the minutes posted, and you'll see a communication posted for the public about what direction was given to the clerks. And so there are many opportunities, many times and places to provide feedback, to object to a decision of the commission, but 18 months after it happens in a public meeting is not the time or the place. And well, so I think if there was illegal activity, that should certainly be referred to law enforcement, and that should certainly be pursued by a district attorney. But the commission is not a law enforcement body.
Do you suspect that there will be a statewide investigation based on what is coming out of Ridgewood Care Center in Mount Pleasant?
I think that if there is information where somebody knows that a law was broken, they should certainly bring that to the attention of law enforcement. I can't speculate what that might look like in the future. But, you know, again, I think that the commission made it very clear in their statement that any form of coercion in terms of, you know, forcing a resident to vote a certain way is not acceptable. And that should be investigated by law enforcement. And we certainly hope that that would happen if there are instances of that happening.
Yeah, well, you know, state statute allows absentee voters to get some level of help in filling out their ballots. Explain how far that assistance extends, how far it goes with nursing homes inside a long-term care facility.
Yeah, that's right. And so during the special voting deputy process, so these are two people that are selected by the clerks to conduct voting with residents in care facilities, certain care facilities. And part of that process is also observers have to go and watch that process as well. And so last year, special voting deputies and observers were not being allowed into the facility. And what that meant is that the statute says if you cannot accomplish two visits of the special voting deputies to the facility, you have to mail the ballot to the voter. And then all the regular absentee by mail processes kick in. Just like if you were to ask for your absentee ballot by mail, you can select somebody to assist you. That assister can be anybody of the voter's choosing, and they can assist the voter as directed with any part of the process. But they do have to sign on that witness certificate as the person that provided the assistance. And the reason that that has to happen is that if there are ever questions about something like coercion or whatnot as part of the voting process, that law enforcement would be able to follow up with the person that provided assistance. And so really a voter can choose whomever they would like. There's a couple of restrictions in terms of who can provide that assistance, but a voter can choose whomever they would like to assist them with the voting process. And that certainly extends to residents of nursing home and care facilities.
Wisconsin's chief election official, State Elections Commission Administrator Megan Wolf on the line. It took tens of thousands of poll workers to execute the 2020 November election. We're discussing the active GOP investigations, what the nonpartisan legislative audit turned up, You can join in. Were you a poll worker last year? How do you feel about the Audit Bureau's findings to improve how elections are run? 800-642-1234. There's more State Cap in a minute here on the Ideas Network. It's a State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're in conversation with Wisconsin Elections Commission Administrator Megan Wolf. Assembly Speaker Robin Voss has called for Wolf to step down. Here's Voss on our program last month expressing his belief that the 2020 presidential election was tainted.
But we have got to look forward and figure out ways to guarantee that for the half of the state or more who believe that there were serious problems with the way the election was conducted, that we fix it going forward so everybody knows whoever wins the election, it was done fair and square and not through some kind of manipulation of the system.
Still time to talk about the state of our elections. 800-642-1234. Administrator Megan Wolf stays with us. Let's go to Jeff now in Delafield. Hi, Jeff. Go ahead.
Yes, good morning. Thank you. I appreciate your guest comments about the safeguards for voting in nursing homes and what was supposed to happen, where administrators were supposed to be there to ensure that voters weren't being unethically swayed to vote a certain way. But what protection exists for when you've got large numbers of absentee ballots out there that can be voted anyway? Yes, somebody's supposed to sign as a witness, but what prevents somebody from going door to door, having a conversation with those voters? They turn in their ballot to that person or mail it in. How do you explain the fact that there really is no safeguard similar to what's supposed to happen in the nursing homes with all these absentee ballots? And the fact that there isn't that safeguard is what causes half or slightly more than half of the people in Wisconsin to question the integrity of the election.
Well, Jeff, thank you. Yeah, let's let Administrator Megan Wolf jump in here. Go ahead.
Well, thank you so much for that question. I think that, you know, you bring up some great points in terms of some of the confusion around the absentee voting process. So before anybody can even request an absentee ballot, the very first step in the voting process is you have to get registered to vote. And when you register to vote, you have to provide personally identifiable information. You have to provide what we call a proof of residence document. And that's just the step to get you on the list. If you submitted a request for an absentee ballot and you weren't properly registered, your clerk would not issue you a ballot. And so Wisconsin is really unique from other states because we run elections at the municipal level. So that means that your clerk in your city, town, or village, they're responsible for your voter registration and for issuing absentee ballots. And so if somebody sends in a request for a ballot, but they're not lawfully registered, or they've become ineligible, or they've become deceased, because those are things that our clerks are looking at every single day to keep the list clean, then you will not receive a ballot. If you are lawfully registered to vote, when you request your absentee ballot, the clerk also needs some information from you. And for the majority of voters, you're going to have to provide your photo ID. That is part of your record. And then the clerk will issue you a ballot. Once you get that ballot, like you said, you're going to vote that in the presence of a witness. Your witness needs to provide their information and signature on that absentee certificate. And then when you send the ballot back, your clerk has to check that ballot back in. So again, at that point, they're going to check to make sure that you provided all the information that you need to. And they're going to also check to make sure that your voter registration is still active, that you're not deceased, that you haven't become a felon or otherwise ineligible to vote, before they're going to be able to send that ballot down to the polls to be counted on election day. They're going to check that in, make sure you haven't already voted, make sure you're still eligible. And if you're not, then your ballot is not going to count. And so it's a very intentional, very deliberate process when an absentee ballot is issued to you. And you should take great you know, pride in knowing that it is your clerk in your community that is issuing the ballot. They're the only ones by law that can issue you a ballot. And they know their community, they know their voters, and they take this very seriously.
I want to turn to the Legislative Audit Bureau's report, making 30 recommendations for the Elections Commission to consider. Which ones are you actively moving on?
Yeah, so we will be discussing that with the commission on December 1st. So on December 1st, the six-member bipartisan commission, they're going to hold a meeting to discuss next steps in addressing the Legislative Audit Bureau's report. So for now, the commission has directed us to do three things for that December 1st meeting. We're going to be putting together a list of items that we're able to address right away. Second, we'll be providing the commission with a list of corrections that we'll be asking the LAB to make to the report. And then third, the commission will be asked to prioritize and provide guidance on some of the longer-term projects like administrative rules. So things like administrative rules, the staff at the Elections Commission cannot move forward with that process by law without four votes of the commission. So we're going to need them to consider some of those recommendations in the report and take action by majority vote before we can move ahead on those. And then I do think it's important to note, too, that for the first time that we're aware of in Wisconsin history, the Legislative Audit Bureau chose to deviate from their process and didn't allow us a chance to review, respond, or correct the report. And so we're still looking for guidance from the Legislative Audit Bureau about how we can correct the record. But ultimately, the response is going to have to come from the commission itself, and any requests for corrections will also come from the commission. So I can't really comment on what the official response is going to be, but I can tell you that on December 1st, the commission will be meeting to have that discussion where we'll start taking action on some of the items. And then we'll put out the commission's decision after that December 1st meeting.
Let's bring in a poll watcher for 15 years. George in Monroe, go ahead.
Hi, I've been sponsored by the Dems to look at polls in Green and Rock County going back 15 years or so. And what I've learned is that poll watching is, I've been tremendously impressed by the qualifications, the conscientiousness of the people that have been doing it for years. If somebody shows up with a problem, they do everything possible. Go home and get a utility bill, whatever it needs to do to fix the problem. They are there to make sure that people who show up and want to vote get the chance to vote. And the attacks on their integrity are outrageous, in my experience, which goes back many elections in two counties.
George, thank you. Administrator, I mean, there's been concern, too, that having enough poll workers is a challenge. And I just want to piggyback here on George, because we have an email from Matt who said, is there a fear that people will no longer want to be poll workers or clerks?
Yeah, thank you, George, and thank you for your service. I think that our local election officials and our poll workers, they're nothing short of heroic in my mind. They have done incredible things. They serve their communities. They ensure that we have fair and accurate elections in each of our 1,850 local election jurisdictions. And so I think we're seeing just tremendous pressure on election officials who are just trying to do their job. And I do think we had a challenge finding enough poll workers last year. And I expect with the increased pressure on elections that we'll continue to see a shortage, unfortunately. But I'm so grateful to those that continue to serve as poll workers and election officials, because it's such an important job.
Megan Wolf, Administrator for the Wisconsin Elections Commission. You're hearing her on the Ideas Network.